Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, along with Shad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this Christmas Eve edition of the KE Report weekend show. We were recording editorials throughout the week, covering what was a bit of a volatile week, but again, shortened trading week and lower volume. So I guess it is to be expected, a little bit higher volatility. Fact of the matter is, though, I don't think we've seen any major changes in direction. Not that anyone was really expecting that through this week. It's always a good time to kind of recap the year and look ahead to next year, as next week is also going to be a bit of a slower week. To kick off this show, we are chatting with personally one of my favorite guests that we've had on throughout the year, Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies. Writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors, that is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. And on the retail and individual side of things, Rick writes in the No Trader, as well as 7-Eleven, where Rick picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs with the goal to simply beat the S&P. And Rick, you've had a good year so far, beating the S&P, even as the S&P has continued to move down. Let's start off with the U.S. equity markets, because the markets went through about a two-month-long rally, bottoming at the very beginning of October, rallying through the tail end of November, early part of December, and then topping out pretty much right, I guess, in line with this general downtrend that the markets have been in. Rick, that rally, it looks like it's over. Should we be expecting markets to, again, continue down as we head into the new year?
Hi, guys. I think that between now and year's end is not really important for two reasons. One is, yeah, there's a lot of people looking for a Santa Claus rally the last week of the year. And if it comes, could we get 100 S&P points? Yeah, it's possible. Beyond that, is it meaningful? I don't think so. Secondly, the last week of the year are really skeleton crews at Wall Street firms. Any portfolio manager who wanted to do something has basically done it or will do it by today's close. So I'm not really too into what's going to happen next week. But I think the most important thing is that the market topped as expected. It was actually CPI day, what was that, December 13th, when the better than expected CPI number came out. Futures were flying that morning. The Dow got up, 900, 1,000 points in pre-open trading in the futures markets. And that day, actually, CNBC quoted me because I put out a flash report to clients suggesting that morning's price action was going to make the top for the market. And it has done just that. We know that that day when the S&P, well, let's even say when the spiders opened up at 9:30 in the morning Eastern time, that was the high of the day. And then it sold off dramatically. What I had noticed and wrote in that flash note is that I highly anticipated that that move, that CPI day, December 13th, was virtually the inverse picture of what had been on the October CPI figure on October 13th, when, if you recall, futures had traded down 2% on the day after that number came out, and it ends up the market closed up 2% on the day. So we had a massive 4% swing. That day, I was looking for the same type thing to happen off of this December CPI figure. Again, kind of failing in and around the neighborhood of the 200-day moving average, in and around the downtrend line from all-time highs. That line came from essentially the first day of the year. other than a half hour or so that the market was up above that downtrend line in pre-open trading where futures were well above the line. I had upside exhaustion signals along with just understanding how markets work and the fact that this was very likely the inverse image of how the market bottomed in October to at least call the high. So right now the market, the S&P is kind of halfway in between that October low and the high we made on December 13th. There is some minor support here at 38.14 that we got beneath yesterday, but by the time the market closed, we're still, this is now, let's see, one, two, three, four. This is the fifth day in the last six, I think, that the S&P has virtually played with this 38.14 level, is not broken underneath it on a closing basis. And so there is some support here. There's going to be resistance, probably, I don't know, say something like 100 points higher or so. So next week, we can go either way. I'd say something like 39, let's call it 39.30-ish or so should be resistance at this point. But in the bigger picture, as we kind of go forward into next year, I am still a bear. You guys know, because we talk every month, I have sold every rally this year, almost right at the tip of the rally. And we keep having clients reduce their exposure on these rallies. And we've tactically sometimes bought the bottoms or near the bottoms. But more important to me is that they reduce exposure. And some of the strategists on the street who are looking for S&P 4500 and even higher next year, I don't think it's coming. I can't say I'm a huge bear, but I still rather be selling rallies than buying dips. And this has been kind of a great year to do both because we've had lots of opportunities on both sides. And that's part of the reason, too, that when you were introducing me and talking about the 7-Eleven report and that I'm handily beating the market this year, our 7-Eleven report is fully invested in the stock market all the time. It's 100% invested 100% of the time. But what we do is we choose no more than 7 of the 11 sectors to be in each month. And by being in the right sectors at the right time and avoiding the underperforming sectors, we are, as of November 30th, we're outperforming the S&P this year by 5.46%, virtually 5.5% in a difficult year for most portfolio managers. And we do that because we're able to combine both my 40 plus years of experience in playing this game, along with input from a quant model that kind of acts as a checks and balance system. And it, between the two, we pick what sectors are likely to outperform going forward. The track record on the 7-Eleven report since we started it on August 1st, 2020, is that we are outperforming by 11.64% in 28 months through November 30th. So what this shows you is that when you have a trained eye and the person understands behavioral finance and the game that is played on Wall Street as far as upgrades and downgrades of not only just individual names, but sectors too, we can frequently exploit analysts making really bad calls at really bad times. And generally, with the year's experience I have, I get a sense of how to play against calls that analysts are essentially forced into, either because they've missed a move way too much before deciding what to do with a name or a sector, or their salespeople are all over them because they let's say, downgraded a stock that's now 50% higher than where they downgraded, and they keep getting pressure. You need to make comments or change your rating. Or just getting pressure from, let's say, the director of research will say, you know, you haven't made a change on this stock rating in months and months, and yet the price is way away from wherever your last rating was it was for. You need to do something. So understanding that game and kind of what makes analysts tick, we're able to consistently outperform. So, you know, when I throw this all into the mix of what's going on, I still think that earnings numbers, even though they've come down, need to come down further. I do think the S&P likely makes a new low in the first quarter of next year. And then beyond that, I'm not sure how bad things get, but I see a better chance of getting into the low 3,000s from, let's say, the current 3,850 level. So if I had to pick like the next 600 points, I'd say it's down and not up. And therefore, I'm still going to use rallies to sell into and kind of use the models we do to define at what time and place we're going to sell into those rallies.
Well, Rick, thanks for that kind of holistic look at the markets moving forward. And you brought up the CPI data there, and it seemed like 2022 was really a year focused on inflation, worries about inflation, inflation expectations, and that was what was guiding central bank policies. But as we round into 2023, a lot of the storm clouds on the horizon are really some of the other data we'd be getting in. We got a weaker than expected retail sales number. We got some housing statistics that are quite startling, and the housing market has imploded over the last 8 to 10 months. We've seen manufacturing 10 months in a row take it on the chin. And so we're seeing a lot of that worries about recession or contraction keep moving into 2023. And it seems like the needle's moving that way. How do you see that shaping the markets next year? Does that play into the bearish thesis you were just outlining?
It does, Chad. And part of that, too, think about the headlines that you've seen in the last, I don't know, let's call it 6 weeks, give or take, of just how much, how many layoffs have been announced. And that's just the beginning of them. So when you talk about the consumer and you think about the tens of thousands of people who are getting laid off, I don't see how that doesn't affect consumer discretionary type names. And therefore, you know, that is not one of the 11 sectors I'm currently in. And I don't anticipate being in it for a while because I do think the consumer is still going to slow down far more than they have. Now, look, gasoline coming down in price, oil going from over $100 a barrel to $70 a barrel, now closer to 80. But, you know, we've certainly seen the consumer get somewhat of a break in the fuel side. And that's definitely helpful in the scheme of things, because when it comes down to it, even though the government often likes to tell us what the CPI number is, excluding food and energy, to the average consumer, it's food and energy that we care most about. And we haven't gotten a break, at least on the energy side. We've got no break at all on the food side. Walk into a supermarket and see what you pay for some basic goods, and it's really getting crazy, the percent increase. I'm trying to remember what it was. I was in Costco last week, and something that the prior time I had paid for it, I think it maybe it was $9, and now it was $13.50. I mean, that's a 50% increase in price. You know, that type thing where you're just paying so much more for basics in your home really takes a hit on consumers, and most especially those that are on the lower end of the, you know, economic chain. I think that when we think about how the market's going to trade in 2023, the strategists who are putting out these 4,500 levels for the S&P and more are still thinking that this is a bull market that we've had since like 2009 and that this is just a minor pullback. And even though we hit, you know, the 20% level, which many in their head will say, okay, it's a bear market, they're grappling for reasons to find bullish information. And there's a few names, I won't mention them, but there's, you know, any of your listeners, there's a few people who keep showing up on TV who are, they've just been bulls all year long. And every single time the market sells off, they'll give you some reason why it's now time to buy again. And they're just wrong, wrong, wrong all year long. And when you think about what they're looking at and how they're looking at the market, to me, I have no doubt that, especially looking at things as I do from a behavioral finance point of view, these people have such confirmation bias. They're simply looking at data that confirms their bullish view. So they'll disregard bearish stuff and simply give you the bullish reasons that the market can go higher. And to me, these are easy people to take advantage of because, first of all, I can't believe that any well-known strategist can watch the S&P go from 4,800 to 3,500 and be bullish all the way down, and every public commentary is bullish. So I kind of look at it in terms of shame on you for hurting your clients that badly that you can't just see and admit that you got it wrong. And these are the type of people who, when they're interviewed and they keep coming up with bullish calls, I always feel like the interviewers on TV, the hosts of the shows that have these people on, don't ask the right question. And the question they refuse to ask is, how low would the S&P have to go in order to turn you into a bear? And I bet some pretty hefty money that the answer these people would say is there is no level. And once that becomes the answer, then, you know, there's absolutely no reason to listen to somebody because they're going to be bullish no matter what. And it would be the same if somebody was just always bearish and always looking at the bearish reasons. A strategist needs to kind of see what's going on, anticipate where the next move is going to be of significance with an underlying theme for even the bigger backdrop. So I want to have like a multi-week to 1 or 2 month idea of what's going to happen within the context of what I think is going to happen over the next 6 months. And I think as we go into this coming year, there's still enough bulls out there and there's enough of the public that still hasn't sold, that keeps listening to these people and they hang on, or they listen to a financial advisor who touts the old, well, hang in there, you've invested for the long term, stick with it, and where people have not sold at all. I think there's more downside pressure coming, and that's why I can make the case that we likely make new lows, if not minimally, but even potentially significantly, and the S&P gets down another, 500 points from here.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that one, Rick. Simply just look at the chart, right? The chart is showing us that it looks like lower levels are coming, and a lot of the reasons for those lower levels are valid, but hey, you're always going to have bulls out there. Let's take a look to some of the other markets. The bond market, that's a real standout from this year, too, because of just how much rates have gone higher. The 10-year started the year right around, let's say, 1.5%, and we're all the way up to almost 4% right now, and we did make the break almost to 4.5% earlier this year. When it comes to bonds, do you see yields remaining elevated here? Almost a new world that we are in.
To me, as long as the U.S. 10-year stays above the low 3.4% level, there's no, I'm not going to cut it down to the absolute basis point, but over the last few weeks, on three different days, we got down between 3.43 and 3.4% and have bounced. And as long as that low stays in place, then I actually think rates are going to go a little bit higher here, maybe get up to like 3.85 or so. They're currently 3.75. So we've moved up 30 bips off of last week's low, or 2 weeks ago low. I don't remember the exact. It was probably December 13th. So it very well could have been last week that we made the low in yields. So I think we're getting a bounce here. We run out of steam somewhere in the mid 3.8s. And I'd probably lean into that rally and thinking in rate terms. So in other words, if we got near 3.85, I would be buying bonds with the potentiality that 3.4 level does break at some point in the first quarter next year. And it's the move down in yields that I would anticipate would not likely be from, it's not Fed induced, or it's not people thinking the Fed has it wrong. I think it would be more towards a flight to safety, which we've not seen a heck of a lot of this year, right? Look how much yields have moved up with how much stocks have moved down. But I do think at the latter portion, if we do kind of get a swoon in stock prices and things just start falling quickly, I could see a flight to safety that then pushes us beneath 3.4%. And then you have the chance to get in the first quarter all the way down to, let's say, 2.8%, something like that, in which case then I'd be selling bonds at 2.8, looking for yields to come back up. But it wouldn't surprise me if you get one move that shakes out to the downside where yields come down and bond prices go up.
Well, Rick, just speaking of a flight to safety, a lot of investors this year did not flood to bonds. Bonds actually underperformed the markets. We haven't seen that in decades, but they did flood into one thing, and that's the greenback. They flooded into the U.S. dollar, and the dollar had an epic move all year long, getting up over 114. I think 114.70 was the high. But over the last few months, it's pulled back, and most of that was in relation to other currencies starting to gain on the dollar for the first time in a while. We saw the pound finally rally when the Bank of England stepped in. We saw the yen rally several times as the Bank of Japan has stepped in. How are you looking at the dollar? Because it's been a counterbalance to the rest of the markets all year long, and it's provided a little bit of a tailwind the last few months as it's rolled over. How do you see it setting up for 2023?
So we got out of our dollar longs at 112.63. And since then, I haven't done that much in the dollar. I had one or two just tactical trades. But 112.63 is where we took our long-term dollar bullish bet off. And what I'm seeing now is that anywhere from, I'd expect the bottom to come between 104 and 101. And we're trading right now just barely north of 104. I think somewhere down in this level is as low as the dollar is likely going to get. Now, still from 104, if we got to 101, that's, you know, a 3% move, and a 3% move is a decent move over a short-term basis. But I think when I look at the bulk of what's going on and the fact that short-term rates are still, as the Fed has told us, you know, likely going to 5%, if not higher, I don't think you count out the dollar on a longer term basis. And I think one look to put positions back on bullishly for the dollar itself, or the implications of a dollar rally coming from where I suggest affect other types of securities that have high correlation or high inverse correlation to the dollar. So to me, it is important to understand that the dollar and its movement, because it has been virtually the single biggest impetus to why stocks were off this year. When looking at, you know, the dollar went straight up until the fall, went sideways for 2 months, and then in November kind of made its last high before falling. If you have a handle on what the dollar is doing, you probably have a decent handle on what stocks are going to do. So the dollar is still kind of king right now in leading price and understanding what's going on. And I'm not quite ready yet to say that it's bottomed, but we have gotten to the point where I've told my clients it's certainly too late to be a seller. And yes, there could be a few percent here left, but the risk reward to putting on dollar shorts now, to first putting on dollar shorts at, let's say, 104, does not pan out. And as a trading strategist, to me, it's very important to understand what your reward is, what your potential reward is versus what your risk is. And down here, the reward to putting on a short is not, you know, a new short in the dollar at 104 is just not worth it. I think we're closer to a bottom. So I'm going to be looking for a spike down or something, preferably in between 103 and 101, to call a bottom in the dollar.
So, Rick, let's just say, okay, 103, 104, even down to 100 is the bottom in the dollar. That is significantly higher, especially sustainably, than we have seen throughout easily the last decade. Outside of just U.S. markets, what else could that impact in terms of either putting a lid on or even benefiting other markets?
Well, look, if the dollar goes down, certainly it's better for multinationals. It affects the whole import-export game. And I think that in general, Americans like to see a propped-up dollar. It doesn't have to be flying like we saw this year. But, you know, for those that look, I was in Italy on vacation in September, and the euro was, I think, $1.01, you know, one penny above a dollar when we were there. So it's very easy. You go out to dinner, you see that, you know, your piece of fish is 30 euros, it's 30 bucks. It was great to be able to vacation with such a strong dollar. As you say, we haven't seen this in a heck of a long time. And it's certainly been towards our advantage going overseas. I think in general, Americans like to see a propped up dollar, but one that's not spectacularly high. And in general, the government is, I would suspect, in agreement with that type of view. They don't like to see a depressed dollar. Obviously, it makes for better exporting. But there's a happy medium. And I think kind of with a dollar index in and around the 100 level, which to say in round numbers, you know, we are, this is probably a decent place. And even a key psychological level from the market's perspective. So when you think about, let's say, and here we can even shift the conversation to something like the precious metals market. Generally, a strong dollar is bad for metals. A weaker dollar is good for metals. We saw the breakdown, what ended up being a false breakdown in gold under 1675 in the fall, after it had touched that same horizontal level seven times in the last 2 years. And it broke beneath, and I even lightened up a little bit of my gold. I had to, given that picture at the time, but it proved to be a false breakdown. It's come right back, and it continues to hold that. So when we think about also what's the dollar mean for other markets, you know, a falling dollar is generally good for the metals markets. I think a lot more people are looking back at gold as a store of value, and given what's happened in the crypto markets, you can understand people saying, what a bunch of nonsense this has been, and kind of looking more at gold. So I think gold does get some more interest as we go forward. I'd still probably use something near 1675 now as what I want to see it hold above in order to think that, you know, the false breakdown stays in false breakdown and we don't get back down there. I kind of think gold too. The fundamentals to me are still positive for gold over long-term periods. And I kind of think that, you know, gold can have its day, but it continues to struggle in and around 1820, 1825. And we've had minor move above there, but it's not sustainable. And until it is, if we can get above 18 and a quarter and kind of stay there, then you have a shot for, I think, 1910 or something like that. Or something right near 1900 is next target. That's kind of what I'm thinking right now.
Well, Rick, you mentioned how the strong dollar can be a headwind towards the commodity sector and the metals. And a weaker dollar, obviously, is a tailwind. But one of the sectors that stood out in 2022, and it's still on people's minds as we move into 2023, is the energy space. Oil and nat gas are commodities. They are affected by the dollar, but they also have a lot of other fundamental drivers that are pushing prices around. How do you see the energy sector setting up for next year?
I still like the energy sector. In the 7-Eleven report, we've got into XLE, the energy sector, in August of 2021. And it has been our largest overweight since. And it certainly has been a material reason that we've outperformed as we have, as we once we got into that sector, never traded against us in relative terms to the S&P. So it kind of perfectly timed that entry. And I think that when you realize how bad a sector energy was over the prior 20 years, in fact, it was the only sector in the S&P that on a 20-year basis, you were actually losing money on. Until a year ago or so, a year and a half ago, every other sector you had made money in except for energy. And I think the long-term bottom is in place. I will continue to stay overweight the sector. I will tweak as needed, but I suspect that I will stay overweight energy and use pullbacks in the prices of oil and natural gas to further put on exposure. In fact, as we just before I signed into our conversation right here, I was going through email and I saw I got a confirmation email on a trade. I'm thinking to myself, I don't remember putting on a trade yesterday, so why am I getting a confirm? And I actually, you know, so I open it up and I see I have a confirmation that I bought some more. I'm I had a bid in natural gas under the market. So I guess in the last 24 hours, it had sold off enough that I actually got long some UNG, which is the ETF that tracks natural gas. So I've actually just added some more myself to that sector. And I think I was telling clients that if WTI crude oil had gotten down to $66 to $67 a barrel, I'd be all over it. I had major, major support there. And we didn't quite get there. And it's, you know, it's bounced now up. Oil's trading $79.50 in the February contract. I think that could be, you know, low. Or even if we took out the low, that we're not going anything substantially beyond that. So even though I think 2023 is going to be a tough year when it comes to markets and people spending, the price of oil is its own kind of the supply and demand factor. Yes, it's affected by if you have a material slowdown in the U.S. economy, you're going to see less people driving. However, I think given the geopolitics that affect the price of oil, I don't expect a major decline beneath the mid-60s. And therefore, in general, I'm inclined to thinking that it's going to be a decent sector again in 2023. And that something like consumer discretionary is going to have a tougher time until and if we get a sense that, you know, consumers can withstand what's likely going to happen next year and rebound from it in order to come back kind of spending the way that that sector needs in order for it to start outperforming again.
Okay. Hey, Rick, we're going to wrap it up here. We've covered all the markets we wanted to get to. Thank you so much for your outlook, and thank you for spending all the time that you did throughout this year with us. You're a very, very valuable contributor, and I follow very closely to all of your outlooks. And again, congratulations on the consistent outperformance to the S&P. I will post a link to Rick's website where you can find out more about his retail and individual side newsletters. And if you want any, or if you have any questions for Rick, you can always email us directly. Rick, again, thank you so much for your time. Very happy holidays. Happy New Year. I look forward to chatting with you throughout 2023.
Same to you, Corey and Chad. It's been a pleasure, and happy and healthy New Year.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.